listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108. Special guest with us this morning on the Carol Cox Show. It's Konishiki.
Hey, aloha kakaiaka peiaka koike iala. Good morning, people. Glad to be back in the islands.
All righty. Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Thought we'd bring a little bit of spice in life here and relax. And we've been throwing rocks over the last couple of months.
Yeah, so. I can see that, man. Yeah, coming in from Japan and see the way people have been advertising their campaigns. I'm kind of blown away, you know.
Yeah.
And here are us adults trying to cool down our kids on no bullying in school.
Right.
I don't know what you call that, but it looks even worse than bullying to me, you know.
Isn't that funny?
That's not a great example for our politicians to, like chopping people down on TV. Hey, that's the same thing as, like, going drive-by, man.
Yeah, and then inviting others from the outside to agitate, and then we
that's
get
crazy.
The money, and you pay us, and we'll say anything. That's scary.
That's really scary. You know, I was at that. Just nice to be in an atmosphere with all local people. I was at the University of Hawaii game, mm-hmm. Idaho, last night, and they blew away Idaho. But anyway, it's just a feeling to see local people so happy and
right.
And so proud of being from Hawaii, you know. And after, I just got in Wednesday, and I was just flipping through channels and seeing how these guys are, like, doing the commercials for this next election on Tuesday. It's like, I'm telling myself, they're talking to kids, trying to stop them bullying on the streets
right.
And schools, and I don't know what you call that, man. So I feel very embarrassed to see this after coming back after 28 years of. I don't remember any campaign being like that when I was growing up.
When you grew up, it was they'd stand on the corners and wave, and there were a lot of aloha. But
a lot of aloha. Plus, you know, you hear more of what they want to do for the. They don't try to, like. They had more love for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like they're just here cutting throat. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think the law has made it so easy for even the politicians to, like, go against each other in a very, how would you call it, rough way. Huh?
Did you see anything in these campaign speeches and commercials that is worth watching? I mean,
nothing's worth watching, but they all sound the same to me.
And I mean, is there any promises? I don't see anything of promise.
They're just saying things what people promise and what they vote, what they vote against, and now they're voting for, or you know, this guy was in Washington. He voted against the rich and the rich. Now he's going against the rich and
right.
supporting the poor, or somebody else is only supporting 20% of the rich. Or mm-hmm. like, it's crazy. That's to me. I think most important is what is most important right now, from which has always been my thing, is schooling, our schooling.
Uh-huh.
For the future of Hawaii, if you're not educated, we're going to be stuck the way we are right now. And it's stuck the way it was when I was going to school, and I was going to school 20 before I left Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
I was just lucky enough to be going to a different school. I went to University High at the lab school, coming out from Nanakuli.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, being from the west side, it's sad because nothing really changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
One way in, one way out.
It's the same way, which is very sad. And who hurts from this? The kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad because from ninth grade on, a lot of them just make a decision not to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
The percentage of kids dropping out of school in our area is like almost 50%. And, you know, and if you talk numbers, and like only 2% of two high schools from the Waianae High School in Nanakuli, is only like 2% goes to college.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 2% even graduate, less than 1% graduate from college.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at that, something must be wrong, you know.
Right.
And then we have people, you know, I've lost people in my families who at age, and I guess because of the health problem. And there's the other thing, that's the other issue that I like to push is getting affordable health care for all people.
Mm-hmm.
And educate them. Let's spend more money educating about what the food we eat, about exercise. Because it hurts to see somebody. I lost my brother who was only 50, man.
Mm-hmm.
My sister was 38. So I know everybody have people in their own families that they've lost at an early age, which is,
mm-hmm.
I think they really got to step up. And I think that our politicians have to, I think any politician that works with issues for the school and education system and the health problem,
mm-hmm.
I think should be people that we look at, I think, from my perspective.
And you not only believe that and think that, you're actually doing something about it. You have the Kunishiki Foundation for Kids, the Kunishiki Kids Foundation, right?
Right, yeah. Well, it's something I started. I mean, you know, I'm from Waianae. People know I'm from the Waianae Coast. And growing up with nothing, yeah. My thing was, how could I give back to my community?
Mm-hmm.
And how could I find a way to make kids understand that, you know, get back to school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My focus is more to try to support them by telling them that education is not the only, is not everything, is the only thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's your way out. I play sports. You know, I was lucky enough to be successful in sumo and got me to where I am today. But sumo only lasts till I was 33. What do I do after that, you know?
Right.
I have to be educated enough to know what to step up the next.
But you obviously have a love for it and love for the people, the culture, because you didn't just retire on your fame and all. You came back and you founded this organization. And I guess that's basically the main part of your life right now. You're busy with that and giving. How many kids... And what do you do with the foundation? You take kids to Japan, and you take teachers and counselors and administrators there. But share with the listeners, what goes on with that program?
Between 1997 and 2007, we brought up about, with faculty and kids all together, through my program, we brought up about 500 kids and adults, teachers, and DOE representatives to this trip. And what this trip does is give them a knowledge of just different countries,
mm-hmm.
the country of Japan, and where I started my career as a swimmer. It's more like a student exchange thing that I do. And what I try to, the reason why I do that, I want them to see that there's a bigger world outside of their community, the Waianae Coast. And the activities they go through, they do very cultural things, like they go to the sumo practice areas,
mm-hmm.
the practice sessions, and they actually watch a real sumo tournament. And after they do a flower arrangement, they do the tea ceremony. They go to school with the same age kids at a school. So they have a whole week of mm-hmm. activities and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's a little fun that I make sure the kids learn how to speak a little Japanese before they come over. And they give back by entertaining. They learn how to sing and dance. Not all the kids sing and dance, but it's mandatory. They have to do that. Mm-hmm. And because it's a fully paid trip to the Konishiki Kids Foundation, the only thing I want them to learn is they have to raise money for spending money. I don't want nobody to bring money through their parents. I want them to raise their money to come. When they come over, they have to bring their own money to spend.
Right.
But if the trip is free, boarding, food, everything is paid for, so
mm-hmm.
I guess it's a great experience that they will never forget. They come to the on this trip when they're only 11 years old, so even now I meet kids. In fact, I saw one of the girls who went on my last trip was just graduating from high school from Waianae, and she walked up, "Hey, Uncle Sally, remember me? I'm one of the Konishiki kids at the University of Hawaii game." And, you know, it's a beautiful thing just to see them. And the first question, "What are you doing after school?" No way, I get him. I go to college. Okay, that's good. That's all I want to hear.
Mm-hmm. But the children need, they all have a desire, but they need that helping hand. They need to be motivated.
Just a little push.
And these are the things that the politicians should be assuring us and laying that out in their commercials and going back to that. And
really?
And it's painful. And show me the way. You are the leaders. And
I don't see them as leaders.
The other day when we were talking, I thought to myself, I recognize what you've done. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would find it impossible in a sense for me. I mean, and I've struggled to do a lot of things and mm-hmm. have been successful. But I marvel at what you've done. You came from a completely different culture,
mm-hmm.
something that was foreign to many of us. Well, I know it was foreign to us mm-hmm. all, pretty much, in the Western culture. And you go into a different culture, into a sport, and then in turn you excel and you are successful and you arise to the highest level or the second highest level. And what was that title?
It's called Ozeki. It's the champion of sumo.
Champion of sumo.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking to myself, you are the one or the type who should be consulted by NASA, by the president, mm-hmm. by anybody, because if you can do that as an individual, and then listen to your people that are guiding you and shaping you. You're the perfect example of success. And maybe you should think, and I was going to suggest that you should become one of those motivating speakers because...
Well, in fact, I do that. I do that a lot in Japan.
I can't believe that I could be plucked from my own culture and being inserted and groomed and be as successful. As you with what I mean, that's an arena in itself is very competitive.
Well, I think the biggest thing is learning how to accept, and that's one thing I've learned when I left Hawaii in 1982. The one thing that I had in my mind, I told myself, man, I cannot build any walls. I have to be very open and very understanding what the culture is I'm stepping into, because there's mm-hmm. nothing westernized about the sport
mm-hmm.
or the culture itself, the language itself, the food they eat, the way they don't use forks, they use chopsticks, you mm-hmm. know, and I accepted that. I think it's just how much you can accept as a person when you walk in there, and because there's nothing that they won't cater to you. That's the thing. You're on your own, and then... And I'm glad my upbringing, as you say, many people helped shape my life. And then I think the biggest people that helped me shape my life is my parents, my dad. And my upbringing was very solid, I think. The foundation that they built under my feet was solid enough where I would walk into any room and have the confidence to stand on my own two feet and say what I want to say
mm-hmm.
and believe in that and learn how to go forward with being very honest in my work and what I do today.
Now, many of the children out there, I speak to a lot of them, and they're bewildered and they're at a loss, and especially the system is not affording them all that the system could afford. While we got you here now, can you give a bit of insight to the children, speak specifically to the kids, that lay it out in a brief sense? What should they do? Listening to the parents, don't object to everything that the parents... How do you describe this to them? I mean, you're successful.
For me, through my learning and through my seeing how kids are brought up, I think it's so hard now to have laws where when you... especially here in Hawaii, it's a very Polynesian culture where you hit your kids. You hit your kids, you scold your kids, you're very strict with your kids. And I think the parents are laying back because of different laws. And if they're finding out that kids are like 6, 7 years old, they can take you to court, you know?
Right.
And that's where the parents' authority is weakening because of that to some point. Mm-hmm. But my culture never changed. My parents never laid back on me. They were very strict in what we do. And as you grow older, you see that working for you.
Mm-hmm.
Making decisions, being that nice person you have to be on the streets, and being polite. That's the basics of anything, I think, through sports, learning how to listen and abiding by your peers or your leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way we were brought up. So you, of course, as you grow older, you know how to object to certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, the basic thing is you have to learn how to listen, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And move forward. The kids, one good thing is when a kid is growing up between the ages of 5 and 12, I think that's the best time to train them. Don't let them make choices. It's you have to make the choices for them.
Shaping them.
And that's part of making the kids grow. A good example, a guy who actually runs my company in Japan, he has his son doing something every day. And he's from 4 years old. He made him do sports, and he does a sport every day, and he doesn't like most of the sports. But that's not his thing. His thing is to teach the kid that when you do something, you have to do it once you start, and don't quit. And this kid never quit. Now, he's like 10 years old, but he loves most of the sports now, and he's always on time. And the dad don't even have to even dropping off or pick him up, and he's on his own at that age of 10. And in Japan, it's different. Everything is by training. So
mm-hmm.
now he's doing it by his own.
So,
but, you know, at a certain age, maybe in a year or so, he's going to give him the choice of now what you really want to do.
So instilling confidence mm-hmm. and is what
it's
works
very important,
there
yeah.
and important here.
It's same here, too. It's giving the kids confidence, but showing him who's the leader, you know. You know, it's like, it's hard to say. You don't want to say. I don't want to say. But it's like raising a dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you raise a dog and the dog doesn't want to listen to you, he's going to always dog you, man. And my dogs, they're so afraid of me. I just say one word, and they're sitting, man, and they look at me, and they know how the way I look already.
Mm-hmm. But you love them. You're not.
Yeah, I love them. Yeah. It's about making them disciplined, yeah?
Right.
And then they don't listen to my wife because my wife is always babying them and always giving them extra food and stuff like that. But that's a great example because the more disciplined you are, the easier it's going to be, and the kids are going to see that. As long as you know, every parent knows from their heart, it's hard sometimes, you know, to hurt your kid. You know you're hurting them sometimes, but...
Right. Tough love.
Tough love. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's really tough love. And, you know, I grew up that way.
Yeah.
And I love that my dad did that to me, you know.
I chuckle because there'll be a couple listeners out going, well, he don't like animals. No, he didn't
I
say...
I love
that.
Animals.
He didn't say that he beats them every day to make them obey.
I don't even beat them. I just say I love them. My dogs are sort of like...
Yeah,
they sleep with me. So.
And especially when mom spoils them, you know.
Yeah.
Buy them steak.
And when I'm scolding them, I don't even hit my dogs. I actually scold them, but the tone of my voice, they know I'm mad. They always sneak and they hide behind my wife.
They know.
So that's what I'm talking about. You know, you have to have some kind of control
yeah.
over
right.
your kids.
But I had a friend. If a child doesn't fear something
yep.
in the upbringing, not beating or anything, but that he's going to lose something or not going to have the entertainment or the refreshments that he'll.
Yep.
If you don't take something away from him, I've never raised children, and I'm only speaking.
Well, same here, but I'm learning from just from where
but
I was brought up.
I was a child.
Mm, yeah.
You know, and I'm still a child.
Yeah.
I'm learning every day. I get a knot on my head for doing something dumb.
There's always space for knowledge, brother. You know that.
Yeah. But, you know, if you've got a question for Konishiki, give us a call, 524-1080, 524-1080. And this is we're talking about the Konishiki Kids Foundation, as well as many other things. And where can people find more information on your Konishiki Kids?
www.konishikikids.net.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out. We have it. If you're Japanese and you're listening, you can. We have it all in Japanese and English.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can check out my site. It's called www.konishiki.net.
Okay.
Just with the kids and not the kids. Oh, just Google Konishki. There's a million things on it, you know.
Yeah.
The good, the bad, the ugly. And then it seems like media knows more about me than I do, so check it out.
Of course, they got to have something to write about. You know, empty spaces, you know, they walk in the door and they say, well, I got 9 inches here. I need to put some words in there. Well,
you got to put some ink on, man.
Exactly. And, you know, about culture. What is it that, if you can, that when you left here going to Japan, this culture, your local culture, can you recall anything that assisted you in getting by there and acclimating to that? Any values or anything?
The culture
specifically.
What we call the lower spirit, I think. Growing up, felt it very much, like, you know, brothers saying hi, sisters saying hi, how's it? You know, I think that has kind of slipped, but that helped me be what I am in Japan, because I like to talk to everybody. I associate with anybody. It doesn't matter what color or race or whatever. I'm open to everybody, and that's how Hawaii is. I think Hawaii has a culture that we live in such harmony. It doesn't matter. You're black, I'm Samoan. I'm not Hawaiian, but when you go abroad, and you tell your family, oh, you're Hawaiian, and I'm proud to just to say, yeah, bro, I'm from Hawaii. I'm Hawaiian too, bro. You know, it's the kids too. They grew up with their own background, but when they go away abroad, how long are you from Hawaii? Everybody's Hawaiian, which everybody's proud of, you know, and you like to represent that in the best way you can. And for me, I think sharing, being always like ready to be a friend is part of what Hawaii's culture is all about, you know. That sometimes you're a good friend with somebody, you don't even know their name.
Right.
You know, hey, brother, you remember me? Oh, yeah, you came to that party. You don't even remember his name, but you know you saw him at a party. So.
Right.
But that's what Hawaii is all about, the culture. Sharing is the biggest, is a very big part of Hawaii's culture. Have you noticed, even today, they have luau's that even people don't have invitations, they're like, crash the party. No one grabs them by the neck, hey, you gotta leave, you know. It's
and no one said you were crashing. I don't even think that such a term existed in old times.
That's kind of culture that I try to do. I do a lot. I produce a lot of, like, private parties in Japan, some of my private time. And that's the way I rock it, too. Yeah, you bring a friend, no matter.
I talked to a young man, and I told him that you were going to come on with me and talk, and he says, what, asking, was he nervous when he left Hawaii? Was he nervous? I mean, this is his big world. Okay, so can you speak to that and share with the listeners?
I was really nervous. To be honest with you, the way I approached, the way I made the decision to go to Sumo was a very awkward time for me, because my parents didn't know until a week before I left to go to Japan. And, you know, I kept it a secret because my mom didn't want me to leave the island. She wanted to go to school. She just wanted me just to go to Leeward or Greenwood or anywhere on the island to go to school to further my education. But I kept it a secret because I knew she wouldn't, you know, agree with what I was going to do anyway. But a week before going, I was scared as hell, because I didn't even know what I was putting myself into. I didn't know what sumo was. I still thought Japan was where Bruce Lee came from, where Bruce Lee's Chinese. You know, I grew up watching Bruce Lee, so I thought anything Asian was Chinese. But, you know, but that's so much for not even knowing what Japan was at the time. I had no knowledge of what Japan really was, and the culture of sumo. I didn't know what sumo even looked like. So I had to kind of make my parents think that I knew something about it. So when I told them a week before I left, I told Mom, actually, I'm leaving to go to Japan next week. And I got my tickets. I got my passport already. And then my mom just fell in tears, and she was, like, crying. She was so pissed off at me. She said, what the hell you think you're doing, kid?
What are you doing?
You're crazy.
How did you come? What, did you read a magazine, or did someone let us
somebody really it was like the last week of my high school year, and you know, last week you learn how to walk the line, meaning graduation practice. You just check in at 8 o'clock, go to your classes, then everybody go over to to practice our graduation ceremony that weekend. So I didn't even go to one my first 3 days because me and my friend just got to school, jumped in my car, we were body surfing or boogie boarding down in Waikiki. Mm-hmm. And that's where the guy from who's very famous in Hawaii, used to be a professional wrestler, Curtis the King Yaukea. They call him the King. Mm-hmm. He was a worldwide popular professional wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
He approached me. He comes, hey, son, come here. And so he has this husky voice, and his head is all cracked from wrestling. Like, his whole forehead, All you see is, like, all just slices and stuff. Hey, I think you should be a sumo wrestler. I go look at him. Oh, uncle, I don't know what is sumo. I don't know. What is that? So I just brush him off, and I went to the water.
Mm-hmm.
Just started catching wave. On the way out, he still calls me. Hey, son. Are you Salivat? Yeah, I know. I watch your football at UH at Aloha Stadium. You play for Packfest. So he started. I don't know how he was getting my information. But he's trying to find out my name and then what school I went to. And then I did that for like 3 days in a row. And every day I see him because he was actually renting out boards and stuff, you know.
Surf school, kind of like, and rent boards.
He was running right out at the wall, out in Waikiki, out by the wall. So he was always sitting at the wall, and that's where we went. And then finally he told me, I told him one day, let me see. I was cutting out of class, so.
You're skipping.
They call it play hooky here in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was not going to those practices.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sat there one day, so you know what? I think you make a good sumo wrestler. That I don't even know what sumo is. I haven't seen it, and I never read about it. So what he did is Jesse Kualoa, who was the first foreigner ever to win a tournament in sumo. He's from Hawaii, from Maui. He was coming to town, and so you should go meet this man because he's the one actually first foreigner ever to ever make it in there. So, oh yeah, celebrity. I knew who Jesse was, Takamiyama.
Mm-hmm.
I knew who he was because he was doing like a Sony commercial that I saw before. So that's where it started. I went to see the man. He was very honest. Well, to be honest with you, you're only going to get what you put in. And it's not like a professional sport where you get a contract.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have to make it, you get a monthly salary. And that's the higher you go, the more salary you make. You don't negotiate for how much you want to make.
No contract.
No contract at all. So I told him, well, the only thing I'm worried about if I have to pay for my trip to get there and how do I board is, well, when you join sumo, don't worry about the flights. I'll take care of that. I'll get you there if you want to go. And all you have to do, you come and you live in a boys home, all men, mm-hmm. at a club.
Mm-hmm.
So you live there.
Mm-hmm.
As a club, so you don't need any. You have shelter, you have food, you have everything you need to be a sumo wrestler right in the house. So you'll be taken care of. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
At that day, I went and got my passport and got my visa to go to Japan. So right after the conversation, I went and got everything right. Well, I'm going then. Yeah. As long as I don't have to ask my parents for $1.50, I'm okay.
Right.
So I left with nothing. I mean, I told my parents, I don't even need a penny. I left with nothing. I mean, not even a dollar in my pocket when I left.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any luggage. I had a shoulder bag that I used when I used to go to school,
mm-hmm.
with a pair of just a slacks, a lower shirt, my shoes, my Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking of dressing properly. A lower shirt, look like a boy from Hawaii, which I don't really wear too much.
Uh-huh.
A lower shirt and nice black slacks with shoes. I thought I was going to wear that when I went to Japan. But the day before leaving, my mom bought me this pareo.
Mm-hmm.
She made it, said Samoa on it. And then on the way to the airport, she stopped in Waipawa at this Samoan store and bought a shirt that says Samoa. So she wanted me to wear this. So as I went to Japan, if you look in the book you just got, there's a photo of me when I just left. And you're going to see how I dressed when I went to Japan.
Oh, wow.
I can show you later what photo is that. But I went to Japan with slippers, the pareo and a t-shirt that says Samoa on it, you know. It's crazy, yeah.
Yeah, so, but you never feared and you were going to...
I was scared.
You were scared, but you were still moving forward.
Oh, I was scared, but I told my mom, ain't turning back now. It's too late now. And you have to see my mom tear at the airport, pulling my shirt. Ever since the day I told her that I was going to Japan, she never said a word to me for the whole week.
Really?
And her first and last word was, don't go. mm-hmm. at the airport.
She but even still buying you the Padeo and all of that, sending you off.
Yeah.
But isn't it?
Yeah, because in her heart, she said, man, I was a baby boy, so.
Oh.
I was the youngest boy in the family, so she didn't want to see her boy go, man. But, you know, I told him one word. I told him there's a scripture that I like in the Bible that said, no eye has seen, no ear has heard what the Lord has for them who loves him. So I told him that. I gave him that scripture. It's a scripture I used when I graduated. I did a preaching thing for our class the day I graduated. So I still remember the scripture. I told him, no eye has seen, no ear has heard what the Lord has for them who loves him. It didn't mean that it's for me. It's what they've done.
Right.
And how they love the Lord and how they prayed so hard for it. I'm just answering what their prayers. You know, and I told him, maybe this is the answer to our hardship, you know, growing up financially, and I made that move, and when I went, you know, thank the good old Lord, then in 8 tournaments I was getting paid, you know.
8 tournaments.
8 tournaments, the fastest in sumo.
Really?
And 12 tournaments, the fastest ever to become a junior champion. And take a regular person about 4 to 5 years even to break into the ring. It's like breaking into a minor league. Then from minor league, the top minor league, and then break into major league. So it took me like less than a year and a half to break into the minor league, which you already get paid in the minor league.
Right.
But you get paid even more when you get in the major league. So I break into the higher rank, like 10 tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And then I move right up to junior champion because I almost won the tournament, only my second year in sumo.
Now, let me ask you, you now sound fluent in Japanese. When and where and how did you become fluent? Did you leave here with any Japanese? You knew not so.
I knew nothing in Japanese. I had it's a funny story because I took Japanese class in Japan in my school, and then because it was after lunch, you know, every time after lunch you get sleepy, man. So we used to wear the shades. I used to wear real dark shades and wear a football baseball cap and sit in the back of the class. So the only thing I knew how to say is. My teacher's name was Sakahara. So all we had to say every time, Sakahara-sensei, konnichiwa. Then we would go in the back and fall asleep and get up after class, can hear the class finishing. So, sayonara, Sakahara-sensei. So I figure, okay, she's nice. She's a softie, so we can, this is a good class to kind of slack off and kick back. So that's why we choose the class, because we knew this teacher wasn't hardcore. She was like soft. I thought she was soft. A week later, or just a week into her class, we got it, and she told, you have to go to principal's office. I went to the principal's office. She reported me and my 2 other friends. Well, we're all football players.
Right.
Reported us that she wanted us out of her class. We got kicked out of her class the second week of school, man.
You've been exposed.
Exposed. Go and learn Hawaiian.
So then you got to Japan, and that's when you started to...
Yeah, well, you know, you get thrown into this box that all you hear is Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese radio, Japanese music, Japanese TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, first couple, I guess maybe half a year, so it's kind of lonely feeling where you see guys looking at you, they're laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm from Waianae, bro. Don't look at me and laugh, bro. You know what that means, bro. I'm going to crack your head, bro. You know, that attitude, yeah?
Right.
But there's nothing I can do because I couldn't understand what's going on. And all I could do is just sit there and just like, think to myself, I wonder what they're saying. But, you know, it didn't last too long. I really picked up on the language, like, in a year. I could say things. I could get in a taxi and leave and stuff. So, you know, I guess I had some kind of knowledge of remembering how to speak or so, I guess. But that was the hard part.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd like to play another song. This is from one of your CDs.
Yeah, one of my CDs 2 years ago is a CD already called Makaho.
Okay, just to let you know, Konishiki, number 7 won't read in our CD player, so is number 1 okay?
Okay, number 1. I like to be number 1.
Okay. Number 7 won't play. That's the same.
Oh, Ale, Ale, Apaha, Eme, Anala, Lu.
Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. I'm sitting here and enjoying this conversation with Konishki, and I'm telling you, very motivating, and even I need to be motivated sometimes.
We all need, man.
Yeah, and you just mentioned about success.
Yeah.
Again, if you could. What's your vision and your understanding of success? How do you incorporate it in your life?
Well, I quickly think the word success, it's not an easy task. Everybody says, oh, you've been very successful. You have a big house in Miley and this and that. My definition is very different. For me, I'm brought up a very family-oriented kid growing up, and that is still my vision, my theory of living. And until I have my whole family, meaning brothers, sisters, nephews, nieces, in a position where they're very comfortable in the settings that they live in, I don't think success is the mm-hmm. word that I use in my career so far.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even close yet, I think.
Mm.
It's a lot of work because people think different. Their visions of doing well in life is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can tell you that I can help you, I can consult you of being a better person or finding a way to be successful. But if you don't walk the walk,
you're never going to move forward. And it's about moving forward and finding a way to motivate every each of them to move forward. You know, it only betters your life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they can find that vision and start walking it, it's never going to be a success for me.
I think if more people understood your story and appreciated it, you'd be the beacon, so to speak, for many of the kids that are growing up, and so many that have lost their way.
Mm.
Because there's adversity, obviously, out there. There's everything now coming at you left and right and all. But you were, it's the same elements that influenced you or impacted you were still present, not as intense.
Mm.
But you still have to make that final decision, the individual decision. And so,
exactly.
So your foundation, when you take them to Japan, but the other things that you do with the Konishi kids, what is it that you try to instill in the kids, some of the values, and what other things that you...
I think the most important value is teaching them and letting them know that being independent is a very big step to life. You know, not depending on other people. And I see a lot of families, you know, the parents did work and they have the kids just hanging around or doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I tell any kid, you know, just do anything for now until you get closer to what you really want to do. You know, everybody wants to jump to I want to be a singer, so what do you do? Oh, I just going to go sing. Yeah, mm-hmm. but to support that, mm-hmm. to support that, there's money needed to support that. You know, time that you put in the studio, time that you buy instruments, time that we have to pay to just to sing your music some places.
Right.
Money is involved. And how you do that? You have to work.
Right.
It don't matter what. Just work slowly towards your dream. Don't just sit there. My thing is always move forward. It doesn't matter. When you fall, stand up and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's a minimum money job, paying job, do it, because it helps you to experience yourself.
And it allows you to accomplish what your real dream is.
Dreams,
don't just sit there and dream your dream.
Dreams don't come true by sitting in the house and watching NFL every morning, you know.
Right.
You know, it takes work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my thing. I just try to tell them, bro, nothing comes easy. And don't try to depend on other people. The more you're independent, the more you can help other people, and that's the message, you know?
You know, clearly, for me, in my perspective, a statement on your part and a commitment to express what you're about is that you went back to Miley, and you didn't go and build your house in Tantalus.
Oh.
You didn't build your house in L.A. and then Maui and buy this private portion of the beach.
Yeah.
You went back to Waianae and the coast. Why?
It's a symbol. And to me, it's more like a symbol. It's material. And, you know, a big typhoon can come in, wipe it away, and
mm-hmm.
I'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be happy. I won't be sad about it because, number one, it's how I got there.
Mm-hmm.
It's important.
And it's saying to others, ray of hope. It's an offer of...
You know, things that everybody say, even adults. In fact, yesterday I was eating at this restaurant down in Waianae, Harada's, and this man walks up to me. Hey, bro, every time I drive by your place, bro, I always think, oh, how can I get inside there just to look, bro? Oh, I wish I can live that kind of place. Even the kids say that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Konishiki, I like a house like yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's the message. We all can make it. You all can have one if you work towards it. And right now is very important. And I just talked to some school in Waipahu, went down to McKinley High School and talked to him this past weekend. I told him, man, it's all accomplishable.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can make it. But you have to take those steps,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So that equation is learn and listen and incorporate what your values are from your parents, first of all.
Parents, I think basic life is from our parents. Our parenthood, our childhood plays a big part in our upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why there's a struggle that's going on right now. The economy is not helping it because parents have to wear like 3-4 hats.
Right.
Working 3-4 jobs, not having that time to really sit down and support the kids through the schools. And certain kids can't understand most of the work that they do. So who do they go to? Nobody to go. They come home, mom and dad. It's not that they don't want to be there. They have to go to work to support
three jobs
to pay rent. Hawaii is a very expensive place to live, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm finding that out even more and more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm from Waianae, and I just took a drive down to Yokohama Bay yesterday, and just to see all the homeless there.
I think issues never been dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
I hear it, but not to a point where they can really, really help. I guess whoever's going to be our next leaders in line this week, I think that's issues that people here in Hawaii should listen to,
mm-hmm.
and really look at it,
mm-hmm.
and make their decision on who they think can really help that.
I was thinking the other day there at Sam Choi's when the camaraderie that I saw displayed with you, between you and Sam.
Oh, me and Sam go really
And I'm thinking, here's the key to many of the problems in speaking to the problems specifically, mm-hmm. homelessness, drug abuse, and mm-hmm. on all of that, when people don't know that Sam mm-hmm. is really involved at the same level, even though he was, quote, successful, he
yeah.
still deals with the issues, the demons there that he tries to get rid of in the communities of the drugs and all. So wouldn't it be nice if our local politicians and our governors, whomever it is, reach out and incorporate you and build a team of people such as yourself, Sam, you, and others. And I know they're willing.
I know there's a lot of people willing. And one good example, because it's football season, it's easy to talk about. A lot of our boys are making it in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were growing up, there's no such thing as clinics that was done by local people,
right.
local boys. Because of the NFL, we have a lot of boys there. I'm hearing more that they're all coming back and giving back to the communities, having free clinics for the kids.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of people that people look up to, especially out in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's if they can form some kind of organization, some kind of section in the politician world where they can have real people that deal with real issues to go out and deal with the real people who are dealing with the issues right now. I think
right.
it's a good way. Me and Sam really work together. Mm-hmm. Sam does this program almost every year, about four or five times a year with Waianae High School in Nanakuli.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
And I support him by going and talking when I'm here at home and he's around the same time. I go with him.
Well, anytime you're back, I do drop in with us and you, the show, you can, I'm always willing and happy because when I go to the Waianae side, mm-hmm. I'm looking for the environmental things. What it is that makes
it
ugly and nasty, which discourages people. If I have to walk by trash every day,
mm.
then that sends a message to me
mm.
as a child. Nobody cares about me, so mm. when I get out there mm. with vigor, I look for those things. And then in the process, it teaches the government to mm. be more responsible. It teaches the children that it's okay to care about that.
Yep.
It's okay to reach out and look out and pick up some trash out of the stream and know that we don't have to tolerate that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I admire about you, and I've watched you and see some of the things you do now.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, I saw you as a sumo wrestler, mm-hmm. and you were successful. But mm-hmm. then listening and learning about your Konishiki kids,
mm-hmm.
it's awesome.
Well, everything now is just everything I do in my work in Japan too. The reason why I can really work for it and be happy in every day in my work is because whatever I do, people see me,
mm-hmm.
and when they see me, I want them to look through me and see my program.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm trying to do, and it's like marketing my own program.
Right.
And how best can you do it by doing it by yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess through sumo, the name has built, it's a brand, Konishiki, has helped me even have people looking at the foundation or supporting it in any way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if possible, people will go through my homepage and check out the kids, Konishiki Kids Foundation. Actually, we have an event this weekend.
What's that
in
event?
In Kapolei. We have an Ike Fernandez collaboration with the Konishiki Kids Foundation. We have a carnival. It's going to raise money for the Konishiki Kids Foundation. So hopefully you guys can come out and check it out. Go to the site, check it out. Or if you want to see what I'm doing, my only thing, my homepage is all in Japanese for the Japanese people. So,
mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things written about me. But my biggest shout out is please... you know, it's a very big week for everybody, the election. So
that's this Saturday, yeah, your EK Foundation, or EK.
EK Fernandez is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 5, 6, and 7.
In Kapolei.
In Kapolei Park. And I think whoever drives, you're going to see them start putting up the carnival there. So please come out and support. And if you don't want to support, support something that you want to support, you know, any kids.
And you do take corporate donations, do you? Or
yes.
What, do you take donations from others?
Yes. Well, we take donations through the foundation, you know.
Okay.
And mostly this foundation has been built just by my work, you know. I do a lot of things in Japan, and I'll ask them just to donate to my foundation. So.
Okay. Well, brother, I want to thank you for joining
me. Thank you for having me, man.
Again, it's an open invitation, and I'm really pleased that you would join me.
Well, next time I come, we're going to see who our leaders are. I mean, we can talk about who's what
yeah,
they're doing
and
at the time.
And we'll give them some guidance, either by phone or by in person.
They need a lot of guidance, especially our city here in Honolulu.
Okay, well, I want to thank my guest, Konishiki, and I appreciate his time and all. I want to say aloha and...
thank you.
All righty. I'm going to leave here with a little tune from Konishiki, and take care.
I'm
a white
guy. You're
a white guy. I'm a white
guy.
I'm always taking your time, honey, no moyari.
Don't worry, yorokonde, matteru wa every time.
What time is it? I'm a wire time.
Hone, you're a wire time.
So then, I'm a wire time.
Honey, don't mind, you're a wire time.
Honey, don't worry, itsudemo, kutari wa a wire time.
I'm
a white time.
You're a white time.
So I'm a white time.
And you don't mind. You're a white time.
Honey, don't worry.
It's the most.
To tell you why, a white time. It's the most.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after CBS News on K108.
This is KWAI Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial.